Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Today's show brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 Hummel's Wharf, online at sunburymotors.com. Ford, Kia, Hyundai, best in new inventory, great pre-owned inventory, all with the Sunbury Motors guarantee, and a fabulous service department. They need more technicians than ever. Apply now. They want to hear from you. At Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors, Kia, routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf, online at sunburymotors.com. Time now for our play-by-play call of the day.
Play clock near one. Corner of the end zone, Lamb. One-handed try. He got it. Touchdown, Lamb. What a catch. What a throw. And the Cowboys back on top.
The Eagles wish they had a guy like that who could actually play. Just kidding. Great play. Cooper Rush, who's a good backup quarterback in the NFL. I mean, he's had three starts in the as a backup. He's won all three so far. You know, he holds the fort for them, and their defense is playing great. And again, I mean, you're watching, what, is it Evans last night? It's, I always laugh every time I hear, oh, Alabama, they're going to be an NFL team. Then these guys get to the NFL, and they get destroyed. Neal gets destroyed. The kid, I mean, Leatherwood out with the Raiders gets destroyed. It's like, guys, they're pros for a reason. All right, let's bring in Dave Zingaro, NBC Philly. Dave, how you been?
I'm good. How are you?
Doing well. All right, great start for the Eagles. No question about that. When you look at the defense and how they're playing now compared to week one against Detroit, what improvements have you seen? Where now they become a dominating group?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of things that go into that. Part of it is definitely the defensive coordinator, Jonathan Gannon, calling a better game, but his players are executing too. They have a really good front that's getting after quarterbacks. They have linebackers that are flying to the ball, and then they have a secondary that is pretty good in coverage. So I think overall you're just seeing they don't really have a lot of weaknesses on that side of the ball, and they're able to do so much because of that. They've been a really fun unit to watch so far.
Dave, what is the depth meant to how they're playing rotations, especially up front, and how fresh are they in the fourth quarter?
Yeah, it's pretty impressive, and the depth there even took a hit when they lost Derek Barnett for the year, but as far as the edge players, they're still rolling through Josh Sweat, Hassan Reddick, Brandon Graham, Patrick Johnson, a talented second-year guy. And then interior, I mean, they have five guys they play. It's a really deep group there. You have Javon Hargrave and Fletcher Cox, Jordan Davis, Marlon Tuipulotu, and Milton Williams. So they have five guys that they're rotating at the defensive tackle spot, which it's tough to find snaps for all those guys, but they've done it, and it's really helped them because, like you mentioned, they're really fresh at the end of the game.
To me, the guy it's helped more than anybody else is Brandon Graham. You know, he's had a couple of injuries along the way. He's a really talented guy, but he doesn't have to play 60 plays. And I think that is, I think, allowed him to thrive. What do you think?
Yeah, it's interesting. He played just 27 snaps in the game on Sunday, and he managed to have 2.5 sacks, 5 QB hits. I mean, he was so good in that game. And you look back to, you know, the 2020 season, which was his last full one as a healthy player, and he was playing a ton, and they needed him to at that point. And you just questioned, you know, he's 34 coming off an Achilles injury. What kind of role is he going to have? And it's changed. And I give him credit for dealing with it the way he has. He's been very mature about it, as you'd expect from someone like him, because he's not a starter anymore. They have Josh Sweat in one of those roles, and they have Hassan Reddick in the other. So he's more of a situational player, but, man, he looks good. He doesn't look like a 34-year-old guy who missed last season with an Achilles. I mean, he's really helped them so far.
I totally agree. And has Darius Slay now become the shutdown guy that every defensive coordinator is looking for?
Yeah, and I mean, to be honest, he was that last year. He was that at times his first year in 2020 here. I mean, he's just really good. And he's 31, too. It's not like he's a young guy, and he's at the age where maybe you'd think there might be some decline. And you start to wonder, you know, if a guy like that loses a step, how effective is he going to be? Those questions have been answered pretty early here about him. I mean, he is so good, and they give him the tough responsibilities that they, you know, he has to go out and cover the best receiver every week. He travels quite a bit. He doesn't go in the slot, but he travels to both sides of the field. And he's just been so good. And then the problem with him taking away a team's top receiver is, okay, they still have James Bradbury on the other side and Avante Maddox playing at a really high level as a nickel corner. So not a lot of weakness there.
I'll say this about Slay. Slay's smart. In a league that at times I question, you know, like how well guys know how to play the game. And I can give you a long list. I mean, this past weekend was a list of, okay, what are you doing? What are you doing? I don't get it. Slay knows how to play. I mean, he gets it. He picks up a step and a half on knowledge. I mean, what do you think?
Yeah, no, definitely. I mean, he's a very savvy vet. And you see it with a lot of the technique he plays. He'll sometimes bait quarterbacks into throws. And athletically, he's still there. I mean, he's still a super fast guy. He hasn't lost any of that speed. And I mean, what he did against Justin Jefferson a couple weeks ago was a masterclass. Yep. I mean, I don't know if there's – I mean, how many corners in the league can do that against Justin Jefferson? It's a really short list, and he put himself at the top of it.
All right, let's get over to offense. There are some people questioning in the offseason, especially after the playoff game with Tampa Bay. Do you have all those first-round picks? Do you bother using one on a quarterback? I think Jalen Hurts is ending that talk, and now it's going to give Howie Roseman all the options in the world in that first round. What do you think of Hurts' play at this point, and why is he playing at the level he's playing at?
Yeah, it's been pretty amazing. I mean, that's the biggest story here in Philly is this guy who we all kind of knew he was going to improve because you look back at his history, even dating back to really his freshman year at Alabama, he's gotten better every year. But to see this big of a jump from year one to year two as a starter, it's monumental. I mean, the way he's winning right now and the way he's performing, it's like, you know, the biggest question about this team coming into the year was, is he the franchise quarterback? I mean, the question now is, what's the ceiling for this guy? I mean, it's looking like a legitimate, he can be an elite-type quarterback. He's in the MVP race. Look, it's early, and we understand that. It's 3 weeks into the season. But what we're seeing is really, really impressive. It's the growth as a passer, you know, because we know we can run the football, and that's not going anywhere. But the strides he's made as a pure pocket passer have really kind of blown me away. And if he can play like this the whole season, this team is a legitimate Super Bowl contender.
What has Brown meant to Smith, and what has Brown meant to Hurts?
Yeah, he's a dynamic receiver, and from watching him in Tennessee, like, you knew he was good, but really from the first moment he stepped on the field in training camp, you're like, okay, this guy, it's different. It's a different type of level. I'll start with Hurts. He's really opened up the entire field for Jalen Hurts, and I mean that, you know, the width of the field, he can throw it to the left, to the middle, to the right, but also depth. He can throw it to any spot on the field. He can stretch vertically. He can hit those intermediate routes. And the thing that I really give A.J. Brown so much credit for is we talked about Slay's savvy on the other side. A.J. Brown is a very savvy receiver. He does little things that really give him an edge, and that's important because he's already got an edge physically. He's a tank out there, but he does so many impressive things, whether it's ball control, his late hands are super impressive. So he's helping Jalen open the field, but he's also helping Devontae in a few ways. I think one of those is giving him tips and improving him as an individual player, but the most obvious one is teams are worried about A.J. Brown, rightfully so. So, I mean, they're bracketing coverage, they're doubling him at times, and if you do that, which isn't a bad idea. I'd probably do it too if I'm a defensive coordinator. But the problem is then it leaves Devontae Smith in single coverage, or it gives a mismatch with Dallas Goedert, or it leaves Quez Watkins on an island and he can burn you. So, so many options for that offense, and Jalen Hurts has improved enough to find them.
And then there's Miles Sanders. It's not as if the Eagles are a one-trick pony. It seems like this offense is bringing out the best in him. Is that what you're seeing, Dave?
Yeah, and I give him credit because he's just been really steady early on this season. He hasn't had, you know, some monster production. It's been very good. His average per carry has been great so far. And it's almost like you kind of lose him in this offense at times. You forget he's there, and then you can't do that because they have such a good offensive line, and he can pick up chunks so effectively. That's, you know, we talked about improvement earlier with Jalen Hurts. I look back to when Miles got in the league, and gosh, he's gotten so much better as a runner, so much more decisive, finding the hole and taking what the defense gives him instead of bouncing and trying to make big plays, which at times he did, but he had a lot of negative plays early in his career, and he's really eliminated those. He's taking what the defense gives him, and he's really playing his role in this offense so well.
Right. Schedule. You can only play who's in front of you. To be honest with you, they have played a, at best, mediocre schedule at this point. I mean, the only other undefeated team is Miami, and the two schedules are not on the same plane. I mean, look who Miami's beaten along the way. Is there any concern that, because the NFC is not as, the NFC is not as strong in terms of the number of quality teams compared to the AFC? Because these things go in trends. It used to be the NFC was like that. Now it's not so much. Any concern about anything until they actually face a real test? Because they haven't really faced one yet.
Yeah, I will say that, like, the Detroit game looks a little, like, that win looks a little better now than it did when they won it. Minnesota, you know, that was a decent win. I think Minnesota's a team that people think is going to be okay. And then, you know, Washington's probably not very good, but that's the reality of their division, you know, and they have a chance to really clean up in the NFC East and beat those teams. The NFC is wide open, so I get that they haven't really played any great teams, but they're not really going to have to, I mean, to win the division to get
their
a
schedule,
high seed. So they just have to take care of business, and they play a few good teams. I mean, I don't know what Arizona is going to be next week. That's kind of a weird team to figure out. They play really one great quarterback this year. That's Aaron Rodgers, I think, in Week 12. So.
Right.
Yeah, I guess you have to worry about it when you get the playoff time, but not much they can do about it. They've really taken care of business so far, and that's what they have to do. They have to just beat down these teams that aren't very good and kind of assert their dominance that way.
I'll say this. I would be very interested to see when they face the Cowboys defense, only because the Cowboys defense, I mean, they got some guys that can run.
And that's
going to be the end. Now, the Cowboys, I don't think, have the offense. I don't think the Cowboys' offense is that great. Their defense is probably one of the top five in the NFC. Like the Eagles, by the way, they have a top five NFC defense. That'll be an interesting one to watch. Two of them to watch.
Yeah, it will be. They have, you know, the thing we saw last night with Dallas is that front and how effective they are rushing the passer. That's the matchup in that game, right? Because the Eagles have such a good offensive line. Dallas has those pass rushers. DeMarcus Lawrence looks like he turned the clock back a little bit. And Micah Parsons is just, you know, you have to account for him. He's the new, like, middle linebacker. You have to know where he is on every play. But as long – look, I think those are two strengths going against each other. And overall, I mean, I really do think the Eagles have a better roster than the Cowboys.
I do, too. No, I agree with you. I do, too. I'm just saying I find the matchup of a dynamic offense and a defense that is – pretty dynamic at getting to the quarterback. An interesting matchup that would be fun to watch. I think that's how I'd phrase it. I think it'd be fun to watch.
Yeah, and I'm curious to see how they match up with Hurts in that game. Because, honestly, his dual threat ability puts stress on defenses. And it's not easy to figure out how to take him away because, yeah, you can force him to try to throw the ball on you. But if he gets pressured, you know, if Dallas gets after him in that game, he does have the ability to run away from him. And then do they start to spy him? So there's all this chess game with a player like Jalen Hurts on the other side. That'll be a fascinating matchup.
Yeah, it's spying him. I don't even know if spying him's good enough.
Yeah. Well, you can spy him, maybe not catch him.
The spy's still running after him. I mean, my goodness. Dave, always a pleasure. Thanks so much for your time. Really appreciate the insight and you.
Thanks. Take care.
Dave Zangaro, NBC Sports Philly. Neil Kulong in the final half hour. Great to have you with us today. Brought to you by Sunbury Motors on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
When car repairs get difficult.
Well, I just don't know.
Me neither.
We get good. Sunbury Motors. More than quality new and used cars, Sunbury Motors specializes in complicated auto repair diagnosis. They can handle intricate repairs and even complete auto body with service open Monday through Friday, 7 till 4. And Sunbury Motors has made simple repairs easy. Maintaining your vehicle is necessary. Finding the time to do it is difficult. Welcome to Sunbury Motors Quick Lane. Open 7 till 4, Monday through Friday. Just walk in or call ahead. Relax in their remodeled waiting room with Wi-Fi, beverages, and snacks. Will Sunbury Motors factory trained techs take care of your oil change, tire alignments, brakes, and inspections. Quick Lane, 6:30 to 6, Monday through Friday, Saturday, 6:30 till 2. Sunbury Motors, Ford and Hyundai, North 4th Street, Sunbury. And Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. We take the out of auto repair.
Smith Vilbert started the bowl game last year and seemed to have a really good game. Now he's on the scout team. Can you clarify where he's at?
You know, just not available. You know, I'd like to sit down with Smith and make sure that me and him are on the same page. I don't like to make announcements here publicly before, you know, we have spoke. I will follow back up with you guys now that it's specifically been asked.
Another deciding answer for you. You want all the dirt.
In that case, it is what it is there. Their defensive linesman doing pretty good, but...
You're just not satisfied. It's up to James to make the announcement, not me, so to talk about it. It's up to him to talk about it, not me. It's always been my standard. I'm not going to change. I know it frustrates the heck out of you.
In this case, I get it.
In all cases, you should get it. There's a reason why you sit in a certain chair. Just, you know.
I know.
And you don't want to violate the trust of sitting in that chair.
Of course.
It's really as simple as that.
No question.
So, you know, I don't want to... You know, that's up to him as to what he wants to talk about, when he wants to talk about it, how he wants to talk about it. Go from there. All right. Neil Kulong, next half hour, we'll talk about all the positives with the Eagles. I'm sure you find that to be... I thought all my questions were positive.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right.
It was a good conversation.
With Neil, it's not... With Neil, it's not going to be that way.
Well, I kind of feeling they'd be going that way.
And so they're not, you know. What's interesting about the Steelers is this. They're 1-2. They're not a fun team to watch. In other words, you can have a team that's 1-2, but, you know, they're dynamic, throwing the ball around, they're kind of a lot of fun, the whole thing, but they got, you know, a couple glaring flaws that hurt them. Okay. Right? But the Steelers are not a fun team to watch. You know, their offense is struggling right now. To be honest with you, their front seven gets pushed around. They got pushed around all last year. I mean, part of it is with the Steelers, there is a mirage created by T.J. Watt and, to a point, Cameron Hayward last year, where Watt was dynamic at sacks, big plays, right? And Hayward did really well last year. But for the most part, as a group, the Steelers defensive front seven got pushed around last year. And guess what's happening to them this year? They're getting pushed around again this year, too. And it's up in the air about Minkah Fitzpatrick. He's in concussion protocol. But they're not a fun team to watch. Like, watch the Eagles. The Eagles are a fun... I know the Eagles are winning, but they're a fun team to watch. Hurts is fun. Smith's fun. Brown's fun. Sanders is fun. A couple of those defenders are fun. I mean, the Eagles are a fun team to watch. The Steelers are not. And so it's always, you know, for the most part, it's been the other way around. The Steelers have been, for the most part, the fun team to watch with how they play when they had Brown, they had Bell, they had Roethlisberger. I mean, they were fun. Didn't always win, but they were fun. Right now, it's the other way. The Eagles are the fun team to watch, and not just because of the winning. It's how they play. And then you look at the Steelers. They just right now, through three games, they are not a fun team. In fact, they weren't a fun team to watch the last five games of last year. Today's show brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf, online at sunburymotors.com on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Today's show brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf, online at sunburymotors.com. Ford, Kia, Hyundai, best in new inventory, all with great warranties. Great pre-owned inventory with the Sunbury Motors Guarantee and a fabulous service department that keeps your car rolling day after day. It's all at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia, Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf online, sunburymotors.com. All right, let's bring in the incomparable Neil Coulong, sir. Welcome.
As always, it is excellent to be here. It's nice to not have a game in 2 days to go over, but seems the Steelers might need more time than what they have to get ready for this one.
My goodness. Let's start with this, Neil. 24 minutes of offensive possession in the game. The Cleveland Browns played 24 consecutive minutes of straight man coverage. What does that tell you about the receivers?
That they're probably upset. Choosing my words carefully, I think there are some understandable frustrations that would go on, and let's just put this out there now. If you were to watch the height of Patrick Mahomes, the best of Josh Allen, any point of Tom Brady, even in their best games, you're going to find plays where other receivers were open.
Yes.
Okay. It's not as simple as that, but it honestly feels like Mitch Trubisky is not physically able to see further than 10 yards down the field. There are schematic issues because for a third game in a row now, and I said this last week, you're looking at a complete offensive ineptitude in the second half. That's not a coincidence. That's a defense that sees the only three things that the quarterback is going to do when throwing the ball, and they're defending it without fear of consequence. He doesn't throw the ball deeper down the field. When he does, it's not usually to a receiver who's noticeably open. Not that that option is always available, but it's like he's being told play to play exactly where to go with the ball, and he's not deviating from that. And it seems like opposing defenses are aware of it, and they are doing whatever without fear of retribution. They can just sit on the outlet because they're going to blitz. Trubisky is going to see the blitz and not look at anything else. This is the only place he's going to go to the ball. So they're baiting him into these things, and he's falling into it as simply as, you know, snapping the ball. So you're not going to generate much offense. And this is why they have multiple three and outs every fourth quarter. Every team is knowing exactly what they're doing. Now, as far as the receivers are concerned, they typically, well, there's one of them that's getting targeted plenty, and there are a couple others that aren't getting targeted at all.
Right.
A large part of that is because they're not running any plays. They don't have any possession. So it's harder to spread the ball around when for three games in a row, your opponent is snapping the ball at least 25% more than you are. You don't have the opportunities. That isn't the problem, though. I mean, it really kind of becomes a chicken versus the egg thing. Are they not having the possession because they're not doing anything else, or is the lack of production due to the fact that they're not able to get ahead early and continue and extend drives? It looks. I thought that Mitch Trubisky played okay in the first half of the Cleveland game.
You can't
really scream about it. It wasn't outstanding, but it wasn't bad.
Right.
He took a 14-13 lead into the locker room.
That's right.
You're not upset with that, but then he didn't do anything else for the rest of the game, and you can understand where the frustration will be coming from. And this is really what this is about. I think it's that the pressure is mounting, and this is a very good opportunity to have a get right game by Mitch Trubisky, by Najee Harris, and the Steelers' offense. They really need to be more efficient and to run more plays in this game to really open up everything else, to show opponents that they're capable of doing something else. Right now, it just seems like the easiest thing in the world to prepare to play this offense. They've barely put anything down on film because they don't have the ball. They do the same two things on third down, and they don't have very much success moving the chains. They're completing passes to the same players over and over. It's just not hard to get ready to defend the Steelers' offense, and that's noticeable in the second half of all three games.
Not saying it's anybody's fault, you know, when it comes to like Trubisky. Like I said, I thought he had a good, not awesome and incredible, but he had a good first half. There's no, I mean, really, anybody objectively can see that. But is there a point where the leash does get short, and hey, look, it can't hurt to put Kenny Pickett in?
I think we're at the point where it can't hurt to put Kenny Pickett in. Whether they'll do that or not is probably a matter of sticking to an original plan that they had. I'll say this. Whatever publicly they're going to say about it, objectively viewing it, it doesn't seem to add up, and they're going to support who's in there because my assumption here is that they are coaching Trubisky to do exactly what he's doing.
Right.
This is the way that they feel it is the best way for them to play the game week in and week out. You have issues with your offensive line, though give them credit. They've done a reasonable job. They've gotten better. Their run blocking has improved. The short game kind of takes out the limitations of their pass protection, but they're playing within that structure. To some degree, I think Mitch is really just kind of a studio quarterback, you know. He's
right.
The guy brought in, play this and only this, and don't do anything else. You know, that's what you're paid to do. This is what you need to do. It's not yielding results in any way. And if they feel that the quarterback is doing it, logically, you're going to think that, well, a quarterback is doing exactly what you're telling him to do. But it's the position that affects the score of the game the most. And I certainly don't need to tell Mike Tomlin or Matt Canada that. You need explosive plays in this league now. You need them. You can't just rely on 3.5 yards in a cloud of dust and play defense to win games. They're going to have to get more out of their quarterback if they want to win. If that's not what they're looking to do, yeah, I guess not really much of a point in changing quarterbacks anyway. But just looking at the management side of it, Pickett's going to be your starter next year. If you're not winning games, at some point it would stand to reason that you're going to put him in. I don't know exactly when that's going to be. I don't know if there is ever a perfect non-injury related time for that,
right.
But I would think it's coming soon because, like I said, the Jets are a very volatile team. You're not sure what you're getting with them week in, week out. Beyond that, though, it's reasonable to think the Steelers aren't going to win a game for a while. I mean, you're looking at maybe you're not sure what you're getting out of Tampa Bay just yet, but you're at Buffalo. then you're at home against Tampa Bay, and then you got road games against the Dolphins and the Eagles, which are two teams you absolutely don't want to play right now. At the Dolphins in primetime. That's, I bet on 0-4 in that string right now. That's a hard road to hoe, and I don't really know how they're going to overcome that. If you get your second win of the year against the Jets and then take a four-game losing streak after that, you know, I'm not sure where you're going, but you've got a bye after the Eagles game. Your season is pretty much over if they lose Sunday and then the four after that. If they're on a seven-game losing streak, your season's over. At that point, you may as well put Pickett in. So if it's not before that, I'm not sure why to hold out unless it's to protect him. And if that's the case, I don't know what you're doing with everything else then. You're just saving it all for next year when you're going to probably overhaul your coaching staff. I don't see the benefit top to bottom in how they would approach it. I would prefer just to get Pickett in. But again, if we are to believe that they're pleased with what Trubisky's doing, this is what they want him to do. And the results are not good. I don't think anybody can say that they are.
Part of the mirage with the Steelers last year versus the reality, the mirage being that T.J. Watt is so effective getting sacks, and Cameron Hayward had a really good year. But the bottom line is the Steelers' defensive front spent a lot of time last year getting the front seven getting pushed around, right? Watt sacks aside and some of the things Hayward did, for the most part last year, their front seven got pushed around. Thursday night, what did the Cleveland Browns do? Without Watt, they really pushed them around to the tune of 36 minutes. Neil, how worried are they that that's something that you can't correct?
They got flat-out dominated up front by a very good offensive line.
No doubt.
Played an excellent game.
But they got pushed around last year, and the fans won't admit it because Watt makes it seem like, whoa, hey, that front's great. And Hayward had some really good moments. The other five guys didn't. I mean, they really they got pushed around last year, and they got pushed around again Thursday night.
Yeah, I agree completely, and they absolutely did. And I don't think it's a coincidence either that they also got pushed around on a Thursday night road game last year when the Vikings were set to break all kinds of NFL records against them. What's the commonality in all this? I think it's interesting because everyone was saying up and down that the return of Tyson Alualu fixes a lot of that. Well, he just got benched.
Yep.
I said that this offseason. I'm like, you don't get better at playing football by not playing football.
I've said that a million times.
Speaking as somebody who is relatively close to Alualu in age, I can assure you, you take time off, it's not as simple as just hopping back on the field. There's a lot that you have to do. And all due respect to him, he was a phenomenal player in his career. I have really enjoyed watching him play. You just, it is hard physically to come back, and it's not about the injury. It's about the time off. Your body doesn't catch up as quickly anymore, and it's obvious after 3 weeks that he can't hang. So he's not going to. Montrevious Adams is going to be their starter now, and the other players need to get a lot better as well. It can't just be Cam Hayward. And the situation that they're in now, they had the ultimate bailout plan in T.J. Watt last year. You know, look at the Seattle game. Watt made a play, I think, in the first drive of that game, and then was largely, you know, not really a factor throughout Seattle's comeback, to the point where they tie the game up. They get the ball in overtime, and then Watt takes over again, and it's over. When you don't have that difference maker on the field, you're really the difference between last year and this year, they're getting pushed around either way.
Right.
Watt, though, can flip the game. They don't have anybody that's really showing that they're capable of doing that. They asked for a Herculean effort out of Cam Hayward last year. If Hayward is still on the team next year, they might want to think about, you know, limiting him, coming up with a different game plan for a Thursday night game, because he's not doing well on these Thursday night games.
No.
And their defense was flat against a good team. You know, give them credit for doing what they do, but they're facing a lot of good teams here coming up. And if we're in week three and they look exhausted already, you know, to be fair, they are, because the offense can't hold on to the ball. They shouldn't be running. They're on pace. I saw this earlier. They're on pace. The defense is on pace to be on the field for 1,300 snaps. That's like 30% higher than average. they're not going to last. They're not going to make it. So the offense has a part of this as well, but the defense, it wore down as they, you know, as you think that they would have with as many snaps as they've played. Nobody is deep enough to take on that kind of workload, and we're seeing it already become a problem. And how talented they were up front, we saw a lot of good things out of them in week one. They played five quarters, play one game, and then a short week game. Maybe the extra rest here will help. Maybe we'll see them a bit more refreshed. But if they're not, it's going to be a really long season on both sides of the ball.
Micah Fitzpatrick is in concussion protocol. If he does not get out of it before game time, what does that do to the Steeler defense?
A lot of very bad things.
Yes.
He's the dynamic playmaker that's on the field. He takes away the back third of the entire offensive approach. It shortens their ability. Not just makes it harder to complete deeper stuff, but you're threatening a long punt on an early down when he's back there. To not have him in there, along with Watt not being in there, I don't know what you're planning on doing, but you're going to be in trouble. He is an excellent playmaker. He's the best deep safety in the NFL. They've used him in that way, and he's provided results consistently. To not have him, I think, creates a complete void of playmaking ability, and I don't know how you're able to scheme a way around that. The best way to do it would be to possess the ball and not put your defense into too many situations, because they're going to have to force punts, not take the ball away, or sack the quarterback without the two guys they have that are best at doing that. It's tough.
No question. They're playing the Jets. I know the Jets had that miracle at the end against Cleveland. Are they any better than in recent years?
I like to think what they have. I don't even know if we've really seen them this year.
Let's be honest about it here. You can't keep drafting that high and be worse.
You'd think so, right? And that's like, at some point they're going to put this together. I don't know about their quarterback. I don't know how much I liked the quarterback. You know, he's got a nice level of arm talent for sure. Clearly I'm not the person to be making these decisions, because I was the guy saying that if Robert Saleh is going over to the Jets with a team like that, you want to get the quarterback who's closest to his ceiling right now and not the one that's a project over several years. Mm-hmm. Should have taken Justin Fields. Well, Justin Fields is one of the few quarterbacks who at this point has played worse than Mitch Trubisky has, so maybe that isn't going to work out. But we don't know what we have with Zach Wilson. They're going to struggle with that. Offensively, I don't really know what their identity is, but it was good for them, I think, to have a guy like Joe Flacco for 3 weeks, because Flacco is so up and down. And Flacco, if there's say anything about that guy, the one thing that he has going for him is he has absolutely no fear. He doesn't care. He's going to get the ball down the field. The guy has an unbelievable amount of confidence in his arm strength, and he should. But he's able to hit on those big plays. You're worried about that. It's not that Zach Wilson doesn't have that ability. It's that he doesn't seem to process the game fast enough to see where those things are coming from. So you really have to scheme that up. He's not just making those plays on his own accord. Can he be consistent with that? I don't know. We haven't seen Zach Wilson since he got hurt back in the preseason. We don't know who he's going to be, but they've put talent on the field. There's a lot of talent on their defense. They should be able to make a solid effort in most of their games because of the athleticism and the talent they have defensively, and we're seeing that from them. I don't know how quickly it's all coming together. I don't know how it's strong they're going to be overall in what looks like now a pretty tough division over there. I don't know if they're any better than 6 wins, which is very typical for them. So in a roundabout way, I don't know if they've improved at all. It seems like they have more ways to beat you now than they have before. It's a matter of them putting it together.
6 wins by the Jets normally leads to a parade. Everybody has their own standards.
I don't know how there even are Jets fans. I mean, that's not an easy team to root for year in and year out. And they put stuff together. I think Robert Saleh is a good coach.
I do too. I think Robert Saleh is a very good coach.
They've put guys there to kind of help out, but you need that thing to bring it all together. In my opinion, that's usually your quarterback, and I'm not sure if that's the right quarterback. I didn't know if that's the guy that they should have taken. I see why they took him, for sure. We saw glimpses of it, but his floor is pretty low, too, and I don't think they're strong enough where they sit today to they're going to need more than to rely on their very young, very inexperienced quarterback in order to win games.
As I've said before, hope is not a strategy. All right. That seems to be.
We end with that too many times.
Too many times. But I also think it is the Jets' motto.
Yep.
That and the Arizona Coyotes and the Sacramento Kings.
I forgot about the Sacramento Kings. They blew up the arena. I thought the team folded or something. I guess not.
Well, why do you think Ballmer owns the Clippers? Ballmer tried to buy the Kings and moved them to Sacramento. I mean, moved them to Seattle. He tried to move them to Seattle. And then Kevin Johnson, the former NBA point guard with the Suns, is the mayor of Sacramento. And he got Globe One Arena built, which is a palace. So the Kings stayed, so Ballmer bought the Clippers for $2
billion. Yep.
Cash.
Yep. That sounds like what that Red McCombs did with the Vikings back in the day.
Yes.
He bought the team with the idea solely of, I can build a new arena and or move them. He was a Texan. And there was talk of them moving to San Antonio.
Yep.
But he never got either of those things to work, so he sold them. still made a mint, but it was like, he never owned the team for the sake of owning the team. He's really just kind of a Stan Kroenke real estate tycoon type that's looking to profit in the billions off relocating teams from one place to another and then building a gigantic football theme park for them somewhere.
Right, and that's what Kroenke did. Kroenke's doing that right now at SoFi. They're turning it into, like, I guess NFL Network's there, NFL.com's there. They're turning it into a campus. And then he also owns the Colorado Avalanche, so he has a Stanley Cup. They had to explain to him what a puck was, right? And then he owns the Nuggets, right? They own the Colorado Rapids of MLS. His wife is Ann Walton. Ann Walton's brother just bought the Broncos.
Yeah,
with all that Walmart money. Right, and it's a competition in the family as to who has more money, Stan or Ann. I mean, it's an interesting life, Neil. Those kind of problems we don't have.
if they're as competitive as my family is over Thanksgiving Day-related games and activities, I'd feel vastly inferior anyway. But it's like the level of money that flows between people that it's I can't even get my head around it. I mean, it's just nuts. And for them, that's just, you know, regular day, regular business type stuff.
Well, I mean, to them, the competition is who's involved with more banks. I'm involved with 22. I've got 28. All right. Interesting problem to have. Neil, always a pleasure. You can once again take this to the bank.
Definitely. Good stuff. Thanks for having me, guys.
That is Neil Coulong. It's the same problem the suit has. How many banks is he involved with?
F-O-U-L-E-D, that spells fouled up.
Unfortunately, a lot of them are foreclosures. Here on News Radio 1070 WKO.